Inside the Drive at 5, brought to you by friends over at Jar Ink McDonald's. And if you are out and about, there are a few Halloween parties going on. I know the Elks is having a party. Downtown Elks Charity Lodge. Right now, as we speak, that party's going on. I know there's a party going on, the Heights Optimist Club. Now, I'm trying to get somebody to let me know where's the Optimist Club location. I do know there's also a couple of churches having a party. Corinthians down the street is having a party also right next to City Hall. The church right next to City Hall, Muskegon Heights City Hall, is having a party. If you're looking somewhere to take your kids, be safe out there. It's kind of chilly outside. Be safe. Our beat reporter's in the studio, Andrew Treska. How you doing, Andrew?
Doing good, doing good. How are you doing?
Doing good, man. I'm doing fair, I guess.
You made it out of the disaster.
Yeah, just in time. Just in time. I missed it by a day, and I'm glad I got out because I've been stuck. And, you know.
I did that last August before Irene. I was literally the last flight out of JFK. They were canceling them from, like, 5 p.m. upwards, and I was on like the 11 a.m. flight, and they canceled it when they finally ended the cancellations and got the last plane off. It was like that 11:15 flight that I was on.
Right,
that was the last one out of there before Irene, and that was crazy to just be the last plane on the runway.
Right,
they closed the thing down behind me. Man, just made it out.
yeah. So praying for folks down in New York.
Yeah, I got a bunch of friends over there, and they're all waterlogged, but no one was hurt or injured or anything like that.
You went to school in New Jersey. How far from New York?
That was about a 30-minute train ride in, and then, you know, they've been saying the New Jersey Transit's all shut down between Jersey and New York City. That tunnel going underneath, they won't be getting that going for a few more days. I used to drive through the Holland-Lincoln Tunnel once in a while, but mostly I'd take the train in. And, so just thinking about that track I was always on is completely covered in water right now.
Did you see the picture of LaGuardia Airport?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
That is absolutely.
I can imagine an airport underwater.
Yeah. That is very low-lying land. My first thought was what airports would reopen, and it would probably be Newark first, and then probably be JFK. LaGuardia, though, would take a while.
Because when you're landing at LaGuardia, you feel like you're getting ready to land on the water anyway.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you see the runway.
Pretty much.
So it's right there off the water. It used to be a formal amusement park, but we're praying for our folks over there.
Yeah, hoping that recovery takes less time than imagined and there's less damage than was thought.
Well, you're a political science expert, too.
Oh, I wouldn't say an expert.
You are, man. You're an expert for us. You are an expert.
Yeah.
And so you have been reading all these state ballots.
Yeah, all these state ballot proposals. There's six of them. There's a bunch in different cities, depending on where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Up in Whitehall, you can decide this election if you're going to allow snowmobiles on the roads. In Muskegon Heights, you might be voting on the non-homestead tax for the Muskegon Heights public schools deficit. In City of Muskegon, you might be voting to rezone the Sappy property. But on the state level, everyone's going to be voting for the same six proposals.
Okay, well,
so we're going to go through those six today.
So folks who want to know about it, it's the time you tune in, pay attention to Andrew Treska, and we're going to record this and make sure we put it up on the website too. Proposal number one, what is that talking about?
Proposal number one deals with Public Act 4. Now, Public Act 4 came through from Governor Snyder not too long ago, and that allows for the emergency manager to take effect. Also, it allowed for consent agreements like they're doing in Detroit, where the city council is still in power, but they are more or less have to work with the state to write their finances instead of doing it independently. Now, those two different things are under this thing called Public Act 4. Before that, there was another kind of emergency manager law that went way back in time. That was the emergency financial manager law, and that is now in effect. When Public Act 4, this ballot proposal came up, Public Act 4 was suspended. Mm-hmm. That law has more power than the older emergency financial manager law. So that's why you're still seeing, like Dr. Weatherspoon in Muskegon Heights still doing things. Well, they're all technically still in effect, but they can do a little less. Now, this proposal, if you vote yes on it, you're giving it an upvote. You're saying the emergency manager law is good. Let's reinstate it. It was temporarily suspended, but I like it. Let's keep doing it.
Oh, really? So voting yes.
Voting yes is saying that you support the emergency manager provision, you support Public Act 4, and you want to keep it going.
Okay.
Governor Snyder did say he wants a yes vote on Public Act 4 if he were the one voting. It was his law. It was his regulation. He sees it as a way to turn around finances in cities.
Mm-hmm.
Opponents say it's a threat to democracy. You're essentially overriding the power of elected officials, whether it be school board or city council people, and you can terminate union contracts. Governor Snyder says opposite, and then the other supporters of Public Act 4 say, no, the threat to democracy is the city councils or the school boards that didn't do anything while they were in power to write the finances. So that's the debate going on. Is Public Act 4 and the emergency manager thing something you want to keep going in Michigan, or is it something that you want it to end? Now, that doesn't mean that the older emergency financial manager law would go away too. This is just the superpowered one, if you will, that allows them to terminate union contracts and things like that.
Wow. Okay. So if you agree with what Snyder did,
yep,
vote yes. Disagree?
If you disagree, vote no.
Vote no. Okay. Thank you. Number two, proposal number two.
Number two, this is the way they describe it is it enshrines collective bargaining in the state constitution. Now, this means that they will actually put something in the wording of the state constitution saying that public and private sector employees can organize, collect union dues, collectively bargain with their employers. And this would also define an employer as anyone who hires one or more people. It doesn't have to be a certain number of employees. It's anyone who hires someone else. So if you had two employees, they could technically organize and then form a union again, you know, against the or to work with the employer. Right. Laws can still be enacted to stop public employees from striking. Like if a police department forms a union under this, there still could be a law passed that says no, police can't strike because of public safety reasons or things like that, or firefighters or teachers. But private sector doesn't have quite that same power to create a law saying no, you can't strike.
Okay.
So this, in a lot of ways, was like something that was done back in 2002. It was defeated 55-45. In a November ballot proposal. Now, Governor Snyder says to vote no on this because he says that it would create a lot of chaos. Essentially, it overrides like 150 laws that are already in existence to do this new law. So in the end, there are 23 states that are right to work, which says that, you know, you can't have any unions. There's no union shops. And then the other states, the other 30-some, do allow it. Now, mm-hmm. This would go even further than just saying we allow these laws or we allow unions and things like that. This would actually put it right in the Constitution, which is something Michigan's never done before.
Okay. Is this similar to what Wisconsin went through?
Somewhat. Okay. In a way, it kind of is. It depends on which way you're kind of looking at it. Now, this one is specifically about saying, yes, you can organize, as opposed to trimming back rights. Wisconsin, they did Scott Walker and his supporters did more to trim back the rights of unions already in existence. This is more to say, yes, we guarantee this in the Constitution.
Okay. All right. That was proposal number two on state proposal. Proposal number three.
All right. Now, this is the energy proposal you might have heard about.
Yeah.
Right now, we have a provision that says by 2015, we're going to have 10% of our energy in the state from renewable sources, whether that be wind or hydroelectric. It also includes things like biomass, which is like either burning grasses or oils or trash or things like that, that could power incinerators and things like that to create energy. So any of those kind of things that aren't coal or gas or oil, it would provide for that. Now, where this one gets messy is that the wording and the provisions in it don't exactly say how they're going to enforce it. So that's been the subject of debate. If you say it's going to be 25% by 2025, right now we have one that says 10% by 2015. The state's on mark to meet that and all the utilities. But this goes a little further. Now, how are you going to enforce that down the line is the question. That is one thing that has come up as an opposition to this. They just say that it's not specific enough. How are you going to enforce it? But what it would do if the pro side of this says, Michigan has the ability to, you know, do wind, do solar, or do any of these kind of things. Coal prices, oil prices are going to be going up. We might as well work towards this and let's put it in the Constitution so that the whole state is on the same page about it. So okay. Those are the two different sides of that one.
Right. There's a cap on rate increases being at 1%.
Yeah, it's 1%. Now, where this gets a little technical is that it's going to be 25-75. 25% renewable, 75% can be anything. It can be coal, gas, oil, or it could be more wind or solar or hydroelectric. But only on that 25% would the rate increase 1%. Now, if coal prices went up 6%, They would have to figure out some way to blend rate increases and say, okay, well, this town, you know, is getting energy, but they're getting some of it from hydroelectric and some from coal and some from oil. So therefore, we're going to raise their rate 3% or something like that. That hasn't been figured out in the language of the law. That would have to be figured out after the fact. But there'd have to be some way. But that gets a little difficult, too, because when you generate electricity, it doesn't necessarily go just down the street. We don't actually get all of our energy here in Muskegon County from the Cobb plant.
Okay.
That energy gets sent elsewhere through the nation's power grid. We might be getting some wind power from northern Indiana someday because under this, consumers' energy could buy electricity from another company. So how are you going to figure out how much the rate increase is? It's not in the provision.
Wow.
Yep.
So a lot of unanswered questions here.
A lot of unanswered questions on that one. However, it does set a benchmark to get us off of oil and coal by 2025.
Okay. Proposal number 4 on the statewide ballot.
Now, this one's got a bit of a backstory. You need to kind of think about this one like number 2, which is the collective bargaining one, but this one is really specific. This is specific to home health aides. So that could be like a person who is helping a family member or provides home care to other people. They get financial payment from the government for their services through Medicare, Medicaid. Those kind of things make them in sort of a gray area, sort of a public employee, sort of not.
Okay.
Now, public employees can organize and form a union, but over time, there has been a few different ways that they have kind of tried to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And one was under the SEIU. It's a large, large union. We have a presence of it here in Muskegon County,
yes.
But the presence of it everywhere. Well, the SEIU several years ago decided to be these home health aides, essentially their organizing unit. It can be part of their union, mm-hmm. and then they can negotiate with the government for different kinds of union-related negotiations, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a action in the past few years, and the SEIU has been kind of barred from doing that. So what this proposal says is that they would form a new group called the MQHCC. It's a long acronym. I won't go into what it means, but essentially it would be an agent of collective bargaining for these home health aides to bargain with the state or federal government. Now, what Governor Snyder says in this, he says vote no. His opinion, because he sees this as a way for the SEIU to still collect union dues from these people that are earning, $8 or $10 an hour,
mm-hmm.
caring for family members or other people who are ill. So it gets really technical.
And it could be mandatory. So if I'm taking care of mom and dad and state's paying me for, you would have to be part of this union.
Yeah. Yeah, you would have to pay the union dues. It's a mandatory thing. Whatever this bargaining unit would be would collect mandatory dues.
Now, on the flip side,
yes,
they're going to set minimum compensation standards.
They would set minimum compensation standards. They would also provide for training. Now, the training's not compulsory. Not everyone has to take the training, but it would allow for better quality services, possibly through the training. It would allow for better pay and things like that. It would create a financial hit to the government because they would have to pay the employees more as well. If they negotiate a higher price or for services. So that's where the financial balance hangs. Is it going to cost the government more? Is it going to benefit the people who are actually providing the services? Is some of that money going to go into the union's pockets? All these questions are out there.
What about the individuals who have a home care business where they have workers who provide in-home care services to disabled people? Would that affect them? These people get money from the state, and they pay the employees to take care of certain individuals. Is this saying that these individuals that work for this particular company now
mm-hmm.
would have a mandatory union?
They would be able to organize under this, and it would be a relatively mandatory union, yes.
Wow.
How that would work out is also still ambiguous. How is it going to work out with this employer providing these services? Is he part of this unit? Does his whole company organize, or do they organize mm-hmm. around him and with whoever's paying them from the government? It's a big question. But the big thing about this is that it's being put in the language of the Constitution. Again, something that's never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
No one has ever, except for police, state policemen and sergeants,
mm-hmm.
like troopers and sergeants, they're the only people that have guaranteed collective bargaining in the Constitution. This would add home health aides
to that same level.
Another.
Wow. Yep. That's a lot of union questions on this
yes.
on this ballot, statewide ballot. A lot of union stuff. Okay. Yeah. All right. Proposal number five on the statewide ballot. Andrew Treska in the studio.
This requires a two-third majority vote from the State House and the Senate to raise taxes. Now, it's a little more complex than that, though. It can impose new or additional taxes, like increase a rate that's already there or make a new one. It could expand the base of a tax, like maybe it's only to rental properties or something like that, like we have in Muskegon Heights. Well, what if, you know, say that proposal went to all housing in the thing? Same kind of idea, but on state level. Mm-hmm. Would it apply to only people who earn this much? Well, it might now apply to more people. Increasing that would be under this. It would require two-thirds majority vote from state House and state Senate, or it could go on a ballot proposal and have it be voted on in a November election.
Hmm.
Now, the reasons for, you know, this doesn't allow taxes to be raised. That's an obvious benefit to this that the proponents of passing this would say. Those opposed would say one thing this doesn't allow anymore is with that November provision or the two-thirds majority, in the future, the state might not have the ability to pass a law or pass a tax increase when it's really needed. Like if we were hit by a big disaster and we didn't have the money to rebuild or things like that, how would you get this across? If you have a two-thirds or you have to wait till November for the public to decide, you might not be so agile to raise funds if you need to. What it does not apply to is removing a tax. It doesn't apply to reducing a tax or reducing tax basis. So in a lot of ways, taxes can still go down without this, you know, super majority vote. But what's not covered in here as well, though, is like state fees. So that's like your recreation license to go to state parks or hunting fees or driver's responsibility fees, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't covered under this. Those can still go up. And a lot of research has been done that says that states that have implemented these kind of super majority tax things, they get around it through loopholes by saying, okay, well, we're just going to raise these fees on you. They're not taxes, they're fees.
Fees.
So does this solve the raising taxes question? No, it could create loopholes for individuals. It could create loopholes for the state to raise fees instead. But it could also create loopholes for, you know, the wealthiest 1% or the, you know, a middle class tax bracket might get out of something. But does it simplify the tax law? Does it make the tax law more complex? Not a question that has been answered.
Wow. That's interesting, because when I think about that on driver responsibility fee,
that ain't nothing but a big tax. There's one more ambiguous thing in here that still needs to be resolved. It'll probably be resolved in courts after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You vote for this and it passes. Some taxes that cities do are only authorized by the state. Like the state can say, oh, cities, you can now authorize an income tax.
Mm-hmm.
But the state reserves that power and then can pass it off, essentially. So the state has to say first, oh, city of Muskegon, you're allowed to do an income tax within your city on top of our state income tax.
Wow.
Well, now the language of the law doesn't quite say if the city of Muskegon wants to raise income tax,
mm-hmm.
if they now have to wait for the state to approve a two-thirds majority to say that the city can, because technically that is a state tax that's only being, the responsibility is being passed off.
Wow.
So it just gets complex on that level. But what it does do in its basest form, in its most simple form, is that it makes sure that either the House and the Senate have to have two-thirds of people on board with it, or the public has to approve it by popular vote once every year.
Now, here's the thing. Before this become a ballot issue, they had to garner a certain amount of signatures to get it on
the
ballot.
They do. Yep.
I don't know if it's 10% of the past election turnout, but they go out to these different communities. I wonder who signed that stuff.
Yeah.
Who did they get to sign that one?
Well, if you went down to the Muskegon Farmers Market, you go down there, and there's tons of people down at that thing trying to get you to sign everything from Recall Snyder to the 25 and 25 to the – I had the one with the home health aides down there one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I asked them some questions, and I tell you what, they don't always know the answer.
Yeah, they just pay them, say, I'll give you some money for a certain amount of signatures.
Yeah.
And they knock on people's doors and – wow, okay. Yeah. Well,
they got one more here.
The last one. Now, this one, they have spent a lot of money on this one. Yeah. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten none of that money. So
it's more like a he.
He, well, a billionaire.
A certain Matthew Maroon, who owns the Ambassador Bridge, has spent a lot of money to tell you to vote yes on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what he is trying to say. He is trying to say, and then the other people are supporting this, but really he's driving the cause, He wants that a proposal put or an amendment put into the Constitution saying that anytime a new international bridge or tunnel is made, that it gets the approval of all statewide election and in each city where this bridge or tunnel would be built. So if it's going to happen in Detroit, they need the whole state to approve it with a popular vote. And then the city of Detroit will have to vote on it, too, and say, within the city of Detroit, we approve it as well. Now, this could be to Canada or things like that. And it would take an effect essentially retroactively, the start of 2012. So, ten months ago.
He's trying to stop the bridge that they're
trying to stop this new bridge that Governor Snyder more or less tried to get legislation passed saying, let's build this bridge to Canada. Canada's got all this money. They would own most rights to the bridge, and they would pretty much run it. But we want another crossing for economic benefits, so let's go ahead with this thing. The legislature didn't pass it. He tried to invoke a thing in Article 3, Section 5 of the Constitution, which essentially says within certain means, the governor can just act independently. That got stopped by this ballot proposal. It wasn't ever declared unconstitutional technically that he did it. It's just the ballot proposal sort of stalled the whole thing until the election.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what this proposal kind of does weird that you need to be aware of is that if you want the bridge, you don't vote yes, because the yes vote is saying no, you need voter approval to have this bridge. Mm-hmm. Right now, there is no voter approval for the bridge. So if you say yes, the bridge doesn't happen, mm-hmm. or at least it is going to go through a lot more lawsuits before it could happen.
Okay.
Now, if you vote no, this provision wouldn't go in the Constitution, and the bridge doesn't necessarily still happen, but it's a lot closer to reality.
Right.
Essentially, Michigan taxpayers aren't going to be on the foot for much of a bill, if at all, because Canada is putting up $500 million to deal with all the connection on this end of the bridge. They're going to build the whole bridge, and then any sort of property rights or right-of-ways that they have to change, Canada says, we've got it covered.
Right.
But Canada's going to own the bridge in the end, for the most part.
Right.
They're going to establish an authority to operate it and maintain it and collect revenue from it.
Now, the whole reason why we want, why Governor Snyder felt we needed a new bridge is because there's a wait time now for trucks trying to get over to Canada, exporting, importing products. Mm-hmm. They wait an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours.
7.3 million vehicles cross that bridge a year. That's 365 days, but 7.3 million vehicles. Think about how many tens of thousands of vehicles cross that bridge a day.
Right.
Now, those vehicles are going from Canada in Ontario to all the auto factories back to Detroit and back again. Some are even coming from Mexico to go to Canada to then come back to the U.S. where the vehicles are sold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're all getting crunched through three different crossings, Sault Ste. Marie, Port Huron, and then the Ambassador Bridge in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to build the second one in Detroit is what Governor Snyder wants to do with Canada, and there are a lot of other supporters of it, but most of the opposition has been led by Matty Maroon, who owns the Ambassador Bridge.
So there's basically one person who got all his money. He's a billionaire.
A lot of money.
And so he go out, buy these actors, and he put up a bunch of money in ads. You see ads like ZZM is happy over there, man. They probably can hire a whole bunch of extra people off of him.
Yeah.
So he put all his money up for this proposal.
Yeah. But if you look at his side of the argument, his argument is saying, no, we need to get voter approval before we start building connections to other countries. Now, the language of the law, though, does get a little complex. It does say international bridges, but it doesn't say if it's an international crossing. Now, there's some legal scholars' opinion saying that this could stop any city council or whoever from building a bridge from one side of a river to the other.
Mm.
No one knows what the word international technically means. If it isn't an international crossing, there's some weird wording there where technically maybe it could stop any bridge from being, someone could invoke it to stop any bridge or tunnel from being built. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have to go to another country.
Mm-hmm.
But what this is doing is it's essentially saying, if we're ever going to open relationships with another country through a bridge or a tunnel, we need voter approval first. On that level, you can vote on that level. Special interests are playing into this one dramatically. You've got the governor on one side. You've got the owner of the bridge on the other side. they both want different things. But the final thing you need to know about this one, though, to bring it all full circle, is that if you vote yes on the if you do want the bridge, you vote no. If you don't want the bridge, vote yes.
It appears people in Detroit want the bridge.
I would think that people in Detroit would want the bridge. If I lived in Detroit, I'd probably want the bridge. I would displace some people because they would need somewhere to set that bridge down, and it probably would go through a neighborhood at some point.
Canada's talking about hiring thousands of people.
They're estimating somewhere between 7,000 and 10,000 jobs would be at least temporarily created for the 2 or 3 year span that this bridge would be built.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of construction jobs, and then economic benefits around it on both sides of the river. And you know, there's no belief that this would just create a ton of jobs that would only affect Detroit. It's going to affect Windsor side too. That's why Canada seems to want to build it.
Right.
It's going to create more traffic through. It's going to speed things up, and it's going to possibly lower costs. But what the other argument is though against the bridge is that, you know, if we're going to have a government owned bridge, is that going to hurt private business? And Matty Maroon is the private business. So is it like a government, same kind of thing as like the healthcare bill? If we have a government option, is it going to hurt all the private insurance companies?
Let me tell you, I didn't know that the Ambassador Bridge was privately owned until Snyder got into office.
Yeah.
I always thought this was, bridges are owned by the government.
Bridges are owned by the government. You think that's true, but it's true. Not always true.
Then you get to reading about turnpikes.
Yep.
Different states have turnpikes that are privately owned.
Yeah.
And like,
and then some of the, you know, not to get too far into it, but some of them are sort of these quasi-governmental things where they're sort of private, but they're sort of public, and they're not really accountable to the government at all because they're sort of government, but they're sort of not. Garden State Parkway and the New Jersey Turnpike are kind of like that. They're sort of government,
right?
But they're sort of not.
Sort of not.
So they're sort of this private-public quasi-governmental thing, and they exist in their own realm.
You know. Wow.
One day we might see one of Michigan's highways turn into a turnpike to raise revenue by the government, or it could be sold off to a private owner.
I suggest that to Governor Granholm on radio. That maybe
what did she say? Did she squirm?
She squirmed at that one. She said because we are not a connecting point that it might not go good.
Yeah, that is one notable thing about the whole bridge argument. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, and I had to tell this to all my friends on the East Coast, yeah, it's really hard for you to come visit Michigan when you're stopping through somewhere because really you need to be going to Canada to cut through Michigan. Otherwise, you have to turn right on I-80 when you're in Indiana.
Keep going.
It's like otherwise you go right past it. Michigan's one of those states where you want it to be a through for something, whether it be train or vehicles or whatever.
Right.
But the geography doesn't do it well. However, we have these few strategic crossings. And there's bridges at them, but do we want more bridges? You know, are we good where we're at? That's the question.
Wow. Thank you, Andrew, for the state ballots. These are just the state ballots. In individual cities, you have other ballot issues. And maybe we can have you back to talk about that if you have time.
Yeah, we can try to get back on and talk about that.
This is a lot of ballot issues, folks. You're not going to run into their booth and be out in 1 minute.
No. And flip the ballot over. I think I said this last time I was on air because a lot of times you vote down the front, and if you even vote party line, you think to do all straight ticket Republican or straight ticket Democratic. But then there's the nonpartisan races, everything from Wayne State University Board of
Regents.
Board of Regents, yes, or say Board of Governors, Board of Regents,
yeah.
to State Supreme Court, to school board, to all these kind of things. If you just vote party line, you're not voting for any of those. You need to vote all the way down the ballot through the nonpartisan.
Even my good friend Judge Pittman's on a ballot. He's unopposed, though.
Yes.
Yeah,
there are several judges unopposed, but there's one judge race that is still big. Just remember the circuit court judge one is opposed.
Yes.
You got to vote on that one.
Yeah.
Judge Pittman's unopposed. No one's unopposed for their seats.
This is going to be interesting. If election for the primaries, we didn't get out of here until 12 o'clock, was it?
Oh, it was the primaries was 1.
1 o'clock.
1 a.m. Yeah, I think you had to dash, but Greg and I think we're still here.
We were waiting on somebody. Who was
it? Oh, it was Eggleston, I think.
Eggleston.
I think it was Eggleston. It was the Plumbers Hughes race, I think, so was one of the last to certify.
That mean for the presidential, which has been a presidential race, we're going to be here at about 2 or 3 o'clock.
Closest without going over, I say 12:30.
That's 9 o'clock in California time. 9:30. We'll see. Well, we know California's going to go Democrat, so we can.
Yeah, most of the other states aren't very close out there either.
Yeah, so we pretty much can project how those.
We could pretty much project the whole.
As long as we get Ohio, we could decide to race.
You get to the mountain time zone is actually probably where you could probably call the race. I mean, it's close this year, but you know, the last few states on the West Coast are not. They're not. Not very many of them are in play. So
get Pennsylvania, Ohio, Colorado,
Virginia.
Then you can probably say how it's going to look.
Yeah.
All right, I was in Utah a couple weeks ago. I know how they voting out there.
One place I have never been. I'm trying to hit all 50 states, but I don't count layovers in airports. I've only been in Salt Lake City Airport. I need to actually go there.
Well, I was in layover, and I had to count them because I don't think I'm going back. I was there for a while.
Yeah.
But it looks beautiful, land. It looks good.
Two or three national parks out there. I want to go to all those. Joshua Tree, Zion, you know.
Yeah, but they're heavy Mormons, man. So you know how they land.
Yeah,
they're going with Mitt Romney.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Andrew Tresker, our beat reporter, man.
All right. Catch you soon.
Take care.